Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversations are pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Did you bring your thinking caps? Because it's time to put them on. Because the conversation starts now. Hello, Brains, and welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney. You've dropped back in on the spot. The place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull, and we are taking a trip to the UK, United Kingdom, London, with Kim Usel. We're going to talk finance, we're going to talk love, we're going to talk relationship, and she's got some great words of wisdom for you young millennials and for older people, how to set yourself up for success. Okay. What I can say about your queen is that she's no punk. She will exile you and kick your butt out the castle in a heartbeat. Yep, but she's got a lot of responsibility. You know, and the monarchy is really the breadwinner for the UK. That's what people come for, is to see all the pomp and circumstance.
Well, we've certainly had that today. We've got 4 days of it. Yeah, we have 4 days of holiday. And ceremony.
So does everybody get the day off of work or? Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, we're off. Yeah, today is a holiday. Tomorrow is a holiday, and then Saturday and Sunday. Yeah.
Wow. Do they have special? Well, they have parades and speeches,
street parties, and we've had fly pasts, and yeah, it's. I mean, some people just want the day off. They're not really interested in all of that. That stuff, they're a bit bored with the monarchy or whatever because they're just apathetic. But you know, for everybody else, there's Union Jacks everywhere, there's bunting, there's street parties going on, there's, you know, shop windows being decorated. You know, everywhere is different, but it's a national holiday, certainly in England. I don't know if it is across the UK, but it's certainly a national holiday today. So
right. And so, other countries that still celebrate the monarchy around the world.
Well, because we're part of the Commonwealth. You know, we have the Commonwealth countries which still have Elizabeth as their monarchy. So places like Australia,
right?
You know, a lot of countries still have that connection.
So let me ask you a question. You still feel that there's a need for the monarchy? I mean, really, what does she do? She doesn't set laws or precedents. It's a lot of pomp and circumstance, a lot of money, jewels. You know, do you think there's still a need for that?
Personally, I quite like it. I know that there is, you know, that there is always going to be an aspect of saying there are members of the royal family who may not earn their keep. There are members of the royal family who do little or no work, but there are some incredibly hardworking members of the royal family. You know, Princess Anne, for example, is an incredibly hardworking member of the royal family. Okay. And, you know, we have got, now that the Queen pays taxes, you know, she didn't used to pay taxes, but she does now. You know, we have got an awful lot of change that has happened. We've got an awful lot of people within that family who are hard workers, who have the best interests of the nation at heart. And like any business, there will always be freeloaders and there will always be hard workers and there will always be an aspect that costs money and an aspect that brings money in. And as you alluded to earlier, you know, the amount of income that brings into the UK one way or another from tourism, you know, is phenomenal. Now, what the exact numbers are as to how that balances out, I confess I don't know. But
In other words, it's more than our pay grade regardless. But you know what?
Well, absolutely.
What about over the years? You know, and were you born and raised there in the UK?
Yeah.
So let's talk about equity, diversity, and inclusion. Girl, You got a half black sister from South Central LA. And that she grew up right where I grew up. You had Diana. You had Fergie. You know, they don't seem to like the suitors that the Prince Charmings go out and find. Are they changing? You know, I think really the Queen was kind of knocked over the head after Diana. She didn't really realize the impact that woman had on the world, not just her or her kids. I think that did something to her. And then also, you know, her welcoming Camilla, she's been through a lot. You know, it's a lot, but just, you're carrying on the monarchy. You've got these kids, whether you like her or not. He's still going to be the prince, whether you call him the prince or not. She's still going to be the princess. It's still going to be a fairy tale. But there's a lot of divorce. That used to be a no-no.
It did. And again, we don't know how much of the crown is fact, but we do know that there's a good amount of synergy there with drama and real life. Mm-hmm. But if you look back at some of those episodes, at you know the fact that Margaret wasn't allowed to marry who she wanted to marry.
Right.
That there have been relationships in the past within the royal family and within the close environments around it, you know, politics as well, where you have to maintain a facade, that what's going on in real life behind those closed doors is a different thing entirely. And that's quite sad that we've always had this face that we've needed to present. And the same still happens in politics across the world, in big families across the world, that we feel that we have to maintain that presence as it's expected of us.
And that if very disingenuous.
Yeah, and okay. If we do differently, then we consider ourselves a failure.
Well, you know, they need to do some deep introspective work. Everybody does.
Yes, and it is changing, and it is changing. And like you said, after Diana died, you know, the outpouring of grief was phenomenal. Wow. And
I still grieve. Yeah,
people are, and even here, we see there are some newspapers that still mention Diana pretty much every day. There was some mention of her constantly, 30 years later. And you know, this is a huge area that didn't go unnoticed. So the Queen then had her worst year ever. She called it Annus Horribilis. And you know, she was a shrunken woman at that time. You could see that she was beaten, mm-hmm. you know, emotionally, because
she loved those boys. Oh, yes.
She
loves all of them, but just really what she saw them go through and how tragic it was, and it's just a lot. But we're talking about up leveling people here on the Edge today.
Yeah.
Kimberly, you pronounce your last name Uzel?
Uzel.
Uzel.
Yeah.
Uzel. That's Uzel. Very provocative. I know. Pull that shoulder back, honey, when you say Uzel.
It is French.
Yeah, you are a woman of investments. We were just talking about money and money management, assumptions around money, relationships around money, male-dominated money, cryptocurrency. We're going to touch a little bit on all of that from the UK with Kimberly Uzel. And I love that because I like to talk to people from other countries. I'm here in the U.S. I was very fortunate that my parents taught me financial literacy. They taught me about world currency. They taught me how to invest and how to save. So I didn't really have those issues growing up. Yeah, I got into a little kerfuffle, you know, but that was by my own doing, my own demise. But I knew that I had a strategy to get out. There's so many people that don't have a strategy, that don't know anything about money, don't know anything about world currency. And so you're going to educate us a little bit about that. So tell us, Kimberly, where in the world do you show up?
So I am based in the east of England, in the UK. I have lived here all my life. So I am, you know, I'm from Norfolk in the UK, and I'm Norfolk through and through. I'm a Norfolk girl, born and bred. And I'm very proud of where I live and, you know, the environment that I live in and the place that I've been brought up in. I'm very lucky to be here. And I also have the absolute pleasure of being able to deliver my work globally now because of the changes that I've seen in my career through things like technology and even trying to look on the bright side of all of the things that have gone on in the world. COVID meant that everybody started dealing online. Everybody started opening up to conversations like this online 2.5 years ago that may not have happened if we weren't thrown into that state of chaos through the pandemic. So by having that occur, my world opened up. My ability to spread my message and engage with people all over the world became a reality much quicker than it might have otherwise done. So I'm based in little old Norfolk in England, but I work with people all over the world, different time zones, different approaches to money, different attitudes, different expectations. So I learn as much as I give, and that's just phenomenal.
All right. So you have worked in investment management. A lot of people, now we can't go into the nuts and bolts because we're dealing on two different type of exchanges. But overall, people are afraid of the word invest. And brains, what you have to understand, if I told you once, I've told you a million times, money is energy. Money cannot talk to you. It cannot teach you. It cannot walk with you. It cannot do anything but be a vehicle of exchange. And you have to be able to exchange it. Be, you know, cautious. Of course, take care of your necessities, but pay yourself first. Wouldn't you agree, Kim?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I always try and get people to look at a wealth triangle or a wealth pyramid in every situation. Mm-hmm. So the bottom layer is always going to be your essentials, the roof over your head and the food that goes into your belly. You know, make sure whatever happens that you are covering that. And I know that there are always going to be times when that becomes a bit tricky for some people, you know, recession or whatever, but that is the absolute, you know, lifeblood. Then make sure that you've got a little bit of surplus cash that's not earning you a great deal, but it's there to cover you in emergency, so that when life throws you a curveball, when the tire goes on the car, or when the boiler breaks down and you've got no heating at home, you have got the money to go and replace it and keep yourself safe and warm. So that is your first couple of layers of your wealth pyramid. Everything above there is then, you know, movable feast. You can start growing it. You can start getting it to work for you. And the beauty of all of that is that it can really make your future so much brighter, because as your surplus grows, if you put it to work, if it works for us, and when it grows, what it's doing is it's making sure that we can still pay for our food and our housing and our emergencies for much further into the future. So, you know, we need to invest. We need to grow. We need to.
The assumption is that, you know, I'm going to live forever, that I'm going to be on this job for 20 years, or that I've married up. I've married a rich man. He's going to take care of me for the years. Or, you know, you've got this high powered executive that thinks he's going to run this company, ends up having a heart attack. People do not, they assume, they don't plan. You have to have a strategy in life, and you have to prepare for the unpredictable.
Yeah.
And like Kim said, putting a little nest egg away, watching it grow, playing with it is a lot of fun. But also, teaching your children about financial literacy is key, because they're going to be the ones that take care of you. They're going to go out into this world. Millennials are looking at different things. They're looking at cryptocurrency. They're looking at that peer-to-peer purchase. They're looking at the digital mining, all that. They're not looking at the dollars with the beautiful queen on it or one of our presidents. That's an intangible for them. They're in the cyber thing. Cryptocurrency, I don't want to talk a lot about that, but I do want to touch on it because now it's big in the trading world. You know, people here are buying houses. They're buying cars, you know, Tesla. You're looking at the Meta, Facebook, Meta, they're going into their own virtual world with their own currency. So there's a lot going on in that industry. Are you seeing the same thing over there in the UK?
We are, but what is interesting about this, and what is the real one thing that I would ask you all to take away with you, is to remember that cryptocurrency currently is not regulated. You know, pretty much everywhere is still deregulated. So it doesn't have that element of protection with it that other investments or cash would have.
Well, now, wait. Let me pump the brakes. Because here in the US, there's no level of protection. Our US dollar is not backed by anything. Not gold, not silver. It is an illusion. And the money is only as valuable as we put on it. Now, UK may be different, and I understand the deregulation, but that's what people want. They're tired of being regulated. For example, you purchase a house. You've got to pay the realtor. You've got to pay the bank. You've got to pay the mortgage company. You've got to pay escrow. Everybody's got to buy in. if I'm buying a house from Kim, why can't I give Kim the money and Kim give me the house? That's what people are looking for. They're tired of the overseer. Okay, that was just my interjection. I'm sorry.
Yep. In the UK, we have a system called the Financial Services Compensation Scheme. So if you have a certain amount of cash in the bank, then up to a certain level, which is currently £85,000, in each bank, that is protected. So if the bank goes bust, you get your money back. So we have protection scheme here. When it comes to advice, we have regulated advice for investments. So if you're given bad advice, you have a course of action against the person that advised you. But we don't have that for cryptocurrency. So what people do tend to look at, and you know, I have won and lost on cryptocurrency. So I'm totally transparent with you here. But what we have is people not knowing where to go for information or advice. So they're buying into something that they don't understand. Mm-hmm. They're buying into hopes and dreams. And most dangerously, they are buying based on a Twitter or a Reddit post.
Right, right.
Where they're just seeing a fear of missing out as being their driving force.
Right, right. And then it's like the gold rush, you know, my God, there's gold in those hills and everybody's rushing to it. It's not an overnight get rich quick scheme.
No. There are strategies that you can adopt. There are very solid strategies with any type of investment, whether you're trading wine or whiskey or paintings or cryptocurrency or traditional stocks and bonds. There are strategies that you can have, or there's that blind hope where you are pretty much gambling on something that could be something or could be gone in a puff of smoke.
Absolutely.
And it's that understanding with crypto that a lot of people are not, they're not looking at. They won't invest in stocks because they say they don't understand them, or they have a fear of stock markets, or they look at markets going down a bit and saying, oh, well, you know, it's not the right time to invest. But then they'll go and put their money into cryptocurrency that they're not even looking at that.
They don't know how it's mined. They don't even understand the definition of what crypto is. They see Bitcoin, you know, right. It was a trend. But then you also see there were people that were locked out of their account because they forgot their password. So that lets you know that people are just really grasping at straws. They're just trying to find it.
Yeah, it's like a lottery. And for some people, that pays off. Some people have got a very good understanding of how blockchain works and how the technology is there to do different things and create new opportunities. And we will evolve as years go by, because that's the nature of the beast. And things will have more protection as they go through. And there will be an element of Darwinism within crypto, that it will be a survival of the fittest, that those that shouldn't exist will fall by the wayside. Those investors, in inverted commas, that shouldn't be investing will get their fingers burnt and will not return. So that will, over time, create a much more solid base on which it can all build. And then when our children and our children's children are in the investment world, it will be a very different animal, one that they feel very comfortable with, and one that we probably feel more comfortable with them being in. Whereas at the moment,
and again, we have to get with the program, because things are changing at warp speed.
Yes.
And with COVID, that just really took us into a different realm. It gave us time to sit and think, to create. I know my business thrived. Everybody wanted to be heard. Everybody wanted a presence. Everybody understood the importance of having a digital footprint.
Yeah.
And so they had a lot of money. So don't think that they didn't have a lot of money. And the government subsidized a lot of people all over the world, which they should, because we've done that. However, don't think that those things don't come at a cost. Mm. Okay. And risk versus reward. You just have to figure that out. You're in a male, and I should say it's changing, but pretty much a male-dominated industry. Tell us a little bit about your history and how finance found you.
So I started off my career actually in law. I wanted to be a lawyer, but I didn't want to go to university. And to be a lawyer in the UK, as I'm sure it is in the States, pretty much your only option certainly when I was at school, was to go to university. And I was a bit of a stubborn so-and-so, and I wanted to go and get married and buy a house and do things that were much more exciting than going and studying long term. So I found a way around it and got a job in a law firm and did my lessons at night school and qualified that way. But the area of law that I was in was trust funds. So it was a very specialist, very boring for an 18-year-old. You know, there wasn't too much excitement around trust funds at that time. But it gave me this insight into money, people's attitudes with it, investing. Those trust funds were growing. They were being invested in stock markets. They were there for the long term. So I could see patterns of growth. I understood taxes. And so although it wasn't the exciting area of law that I had originally hoped for when I started my career, it was an area that gave me a really good grounding in money, the essential bits, the taxation, the bits that if you get it right can make a difference between you being rich or poor. And if you get it wrong, you know, you're in big trouble. So I was able then a few years later to morph, I suppose, from one part of a law firm into another, which was the investment team. At that time, investment teams in law firms in the UK were quite trendy. And so they had an in-house investment team. I had an interest in the investment side through my work with trusts. And so I was able to sort of slide in. And very lucky I was to do that too, because, you know, opportunities like that for people who don't have a degree, for people who don't have a background in old money finance, don't come along very often. So I will forever be grateful for that opportunity. And so I fell into it. I was right place, right time, maybe. Bit of stubbornness.
But you were working around all these talking heads, these men, you know, for the most part.
Yeah.
And were they good mentors to you? Did you just kind of, you know, keep your head down and keep your nose to the grindstone? What was your strategy in becoming so successful in an industry that really wasn't, I shouldn't say designed, but essentially designed for a female?
So like every industry, there are good eggs and there are bad eggs. And I came across a really mixed bag. I had some male colleagues, some male...
They all make you fart.
I had some you know, senior members of staff who really did not think that I should be in that job. And I had some clients who were men who really didn't think that I should be in that job just simply because I was a woman. But I had some incredibly good mentors as well. I had some people who took me under their wing and made sure that I knew absolutely that what I did was as good as any of them. And so I was lucky enough to always have somebody who had my back, somebody that I could rant at, somebody who I could go into a little corner and just say, leave me alone. And they would say, yeah, it's okay. Even if on the other side of the room, somebody else was going, oh, must be the wrong time of the month or whatever, which we would often hear. So, you know, it's one of those things that you have to be fairly strong. You have to be fairly balanced, but you also have to be respectful that everybody is different. Right, and I can't change the way that some of those people think. And maybe neither do I want to, because that's just who they are. Equally, I am who I am, and I'm not perfect either.
So, yes, you are. You didn't get an email. I sent you an email telling you were absolutely perfect.
But I think there is this element of give and take, and that we all have different skills. We all have different opinions. We all have different things that are good and bad and a bit indifferent. And I was able to on the whole, work with that. Sometimes it was really difficult, and I won't pretend I worked through having my children. When my children were very young and I was a working mom, struggling with childcare, struggling to, you know, be a good mom and pick them up from school from time to time, or go and watch the school nativity or help at sports day, or any of those things that as a mom I wanted to do, or when they were feeling poorly and I had to, you know, leave them with somebody else because I had to work. That was really difficult because I felt at times that some of the men that I worked with just didn't get it. But again, the reason that they didn't get it is because they weren't in that situation.
Right.
So I didn't get some of their issues.
Right.
Over time, though, we've talked about it more. And again, with COVID having happened and men working from home with the children at home, trying to juggle all of these things and seeing the realities of family and work life combined, things have changed again. And whilst it may not be perfect still, it is changing.
It is
changing. And those attitudes are changing.
Right. What would you say to a woman in that space right now that's trying to establish herself and establish her boundaries?
I would say very definitely know what's important to you. Know why you're in this job, because it's a really tough job. Even, you know, men find it a tough job. Things are fast moving, as we've already said about the crypto world, the way that investments change, the way that technology changes, it is fast moving. So we've got to be somebody who is ready for that and prepared to work with that. And that can be hard because it means your switch off time is limited. So when you want to spend time with your children, when you want to be having a break with them, you may not be able to, because the world of investment keeps turning 24/7, and it's a global thing nowadays. Everything is at the touch of your fingertips and you can't escape it. So if you're not able to work with that, then you're going to find it hard, and that's just exhausting on every level. But if you've got a passion for it, if you've got an interest in it, if you want to do it, then don't let anybody stop you. You know, just go there with your big vision, with your heart and soul and your enthusiasm and all the good things that you are going to get out of this for you, for your family, for your clients, for the next generation, for your communities. You know, the possibilities are endless for the ripple effect, and you can be the drop that creates that ripple. And that's phenomenal if you want it.
Tell us a little bit about your book, How to Create Everything That You've Never Had. What's inside the pages of that?
So this is a book that I co-authored with 12 other women, amazing entrepreneurial women, talking about the struggles that they've had to overcome in some area of their life that's led them to where they are now. And for me, it was talking about the lessons that I learned financially from my mum and from my grandma, and that I want to pass on to my daughter and my future grandchildren. So it's a book, you know, full of inspiration. It's, as you can see, it's not thick. It's an easy read. You can pick it up and you know, have a cuppa and, you know, read somebody's chapter and get inspired. And, you know, for me, it was just a joy to write, because I learned in researching some of the things that my mother went through with finance and the legislation that surrounded that. It wasn't her choice. It was the way that society was at the time. It taught me an awful lot about her behaviours around money. And then I could understand more about my behaviours that I'd inherited from her and learn from them, so that I make sure I don't pass them on to my children. So to create everything that you've never had.
Amazon, right? Is it on Amazon?
Yeah, it's available on Amazon.
Okay.
And actually, you know, it's a small book, but it packs a mighty punch.
All right. Well, that's what we need, to be knocked out. Well, you got me motivated. Okay. So let's get to know Kimberly. Where are all those medals and awards hanging on those lanyards back there? Tell us about that.
So the ones immediately behind me, they are my marathon medals. So I've completed 8 marathons.
Wow.
I did my first one 30 years ago. So when I was 20 years old, over 30 years ago, when I was 20 years old, I did my first London Marathon. And I did my last one in October, just gone. So I've got 8 medals, but over a 30-year period. I'm not a regular marathon runner. but it has been a great escape from those difficult times at work. You know, when you can just go for a run, pop your shoes on, get outside in the fresh air, let your head empty. You're only thinking of putting one foot in front of the other, and you are listening to the bird song, you are looking at the trees, you're looking at the houses, you're just allowing yourself a bit of decompression time. And for me, that has been almost literally, I think, a lifesaver at times. So well, they
I'm
are my
marathon marathon runner too.
Sorry?
I'm a marathon runner also.
Excellent.
I run the water station.
But that's what we need. We need people to do that. Because it's teamwork.
Running has never, you know, I'm a woman that's very voluptuous at the top. And this was not, yeah, it was hard on me. And I don't think that, I like to exercise with music, you know, unless I'm meditating or something like that. And I'm trying to quiet myself. I just couldn't get the synchronicity down. And I see people running all the time. And when they're finished, they're dripping wet. And it just seems like they've been renewed. There is a lot of joy that running brings to them. Let's ask you another question. If you were an appliance in the kitchen, what appliance would you be and why?
Oh, I would be my coffee machine. I would absolutely 100% be my coffee machine.
Why?
Oh, well, I know that too much caffeine is bad for you, but I also believe in a little bit of what you fancy does you good. And I like dark chocolate and I like good strong coffee.
Oh,
they are my vices.
Yeah, okay.
I like a little tipple as well. But you know, I'm not a smoker, but I do like coffee. And for me, coffee has brought me so much joy because it brought me my husband. It brought me. He was the manager of the coffee shop opposite my office.
Oh, how cute!
And I was one of his customers. And
coffee is like bacon. Oh. It's something about the aroma. You know, whether you like coffee or not, if you smell a fresh pot of coffee, it just transports you into another thing. So you're not really a big tea drinker there?
I don't drink tea. My husband drinks tea as well as coffee, but I don't. I have the very occasional cup of herbal tea if I'm trying to detox a little bit, which is not very often, but I do like good quality coffee. And I think, like everything, if the better the quality, the effects, the good effects could be phenomenal.
Absolutely.
And for me, that coffee machine, it brings me so much joy every day. and if I could bring that amount of joy and be that useful for somebody every day, giving them the energy, giving them the focus, giving them the first thing that they do in the morning.
Right.
Then that would be a phenomenal result, I think.
I would be the refrigerator.
The refrigerator.
I just want to chill. I just want to keep it cool. You know, keep it cool. Like, you had a blank canvas. What colors would you paint with?
Oh, now I do like a light area. As you can see, everything around me here is quite light. I love vibrant sort of fuchsia pinks and sort of purples, but I also love the real classic colors, like a real deep French navy, or you know, purely black and white. I think that, you know, a man in a dinner jacket and a white shirt and a black bow tie, you know, that's really classic. A woman in a little black dress, an Audrey Hepburn type dress, you know, you're wearing black, it's classic.
Yeah.
And I love those real classic colors and those classic silhouettes and those, you know, those feelings of class and abundance in a way, but also simplicity, because we can overcomplicate things. I like this.
And overthink them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like color, but I like it in pops of color to accent things and to really make them stand out so that I can then see something and appreciate it. A red rose in a garden is just beautiful. But if you have so many different colors in the garden, you might lose that red rose.
Absolutely. So what would you tell a 25-year-old Kim?
Financially?
anything. It could be about love, life, how to cook a good scone. What would you tell a 25-year-old Kim?
In terms of cooking a good scone, I would say find somebody else who can cook you a good scone and just enjoy eating it. In terms of life generally, we always think we know everything by the time we're 25, when in fact we know very little. I got married at 19, first time around. I had my two children, young, and although I wouldn't change them for the world, I was very young. But at the time, I thought I was the most mature person ever. And so it's very easy to think that we know it all, and we don't. So, take a little step back from time to time and listen to those people who have lived through it. And when your mother says, "I was your age once," believe it, she was, and she made the mistakes and she learned from it, and she wasn't the goody-goody that you thought she was going to be. So, listen to her, talk to her, and enjoy her wisdom, because it can be invaluable.
Absolutely.
But in terms of your finances, when we're young, we think that retirement is a long way off. We think that that our grandparents are really, really old.
Right.
And we just don't put it into our current time. We're living for the moment at that age. We want to have a new car. We want to go traveling with our friends. We want to have a bigger house with a garden, or we want to get married, or whatever. And we always put off planning for our future until later. But the earlier we start, the better that future is going to be.
Absolutely.
And we don't need to wait for a big amount of money to come our way. If we just put little amounts consistently away and get those little amounts working for us and getting excited about what it's doing and the future that it's going to create us, then we are not going to get caught out in the same way. There are so many women in the world who get to their 40s or their 50s or their 60s and then suddenly realize that they haven't got a retirement plan. Mm-hmm. They haven't got a property that is that they're secure in. If their relationship goes sour, they haven't got anything to fall back on. Mm-hmm. And although we hope that none of those things happen to us, we don't go into a marriage expecting it to fail. We don't go into a property expecting it to be sold by our landlord. We don't go into a job expecting to be made redundant in a few years' time. But these things happen, and we need to prepare for them so that we can have a stress-free life as much as possible and get on with the important bit, which is enjoying it.
Absolutely.
And living it, because life's unpredictable.
It is. And brains, you don't have to be old to die.
Nope. And I will say to people, my dad, he died at 55 from a blood clot. He was a marathon runner too. He was you would think he was fit and healthy, but he had a blood clot and it killed him instantly at the age of 55, which is no age. But his mother, my beautiful, beautiful, strong Nana, is 99.
Wow.
So you have no idea. I don't know. Am I going to go my dad's way or am I going to go my Nana's way? I don't know. But I need to prepare for both eventualities. I need to live my life because it might be cut short. But I also may need to fund my life for the next 40 or even 50 years. Our queen today is, celebrating 70 years as queen. That's somebody who's well into her 90s. Now, for any other woman who's into her 90s, she's got to be paying for that.
Oh, yes.
And she wants to pay for
one way or another, you're going to pay.
Yeah, and you want to live those last years of your life in as much comfort as you lived your first.
Absolutely.
Want to be treated well. You want to be looked after. You want to eat good food while you're in your retirement home or whatever it may be. And that needs funding and that needs planning. So the sooner you start planning for it, the better the food is going to be in your retirement home.
I think that you hit the nail right on the head. Kimberly, please tell my brains how to get in contact with you. They can work with you remotely. Education, I don't care where you are. You can be dealing in ruples, you could be yen, euro, pounds, dollars, but the basic understanding and wisdom of money and money management and money movement is consistent all over the world. And she is a financial expert. She's been doing it a long time. So please tell my brains how to get in contact with you.
So you mentioned My Money Movement, actually. That's the name of my website. Mymoneymovement.co.uk is my website. So you can come and find me on there and get in touch through that. Or the simplest thing is probably just to follow me on Instagram, where I am Kim Uzel Money Coach. So as it says on my tag here, Kim Uzel Money Coach, all one word. That's what I am on Instagram and on TikTok. Or you can just type my name into Facebook and you'll find me, because there aren't many of us with this surname. So you're not going to have too much difficulty finding me on Google.
And be sure to throw that shoulder back when you say Uzel. Thank you so much, Brains. I need you to go and do what you're supposed to do. I need you to love, like, and share. Join the tribe. Join the community. We search the world over for the best and the brightest underdiscovered talent to raise your level of awareness, finance, personal care, health, just sometimes a good conversation between girlfriends is what we do here on The Edge. Kimberly, you have been a godsend. Thank you so much. And please, send my best wishes to the